Can't wait to get through this week because Saturday, this coming Saturday, Foreigner is in concert at Harry's Auction, and yes, I'm going to go. My wife said, hey, Foreigner's coming, and they're coming to Harrah's. And I said, well, that means that we can go out to Harrah's, Caesar's Rewards. We can have some fun, play some games, go to the concert, have a great time. Stay out there, take in the pool, the food, all the fun. We'll do it this Saturday at Harrah's Auction Resort and Casino in Maricopa. If you've not been, while we're out there, we're probably going to head over and play some golf right nearby Southern Dunes. And it's a terrific place to stay as a home base at Harrah's Auction Casino in Maricopa. Foreigner this Saturday night.
The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Off we go into a new week. Thanks for being with us. We have a jam-packed show today. Our chairman of the board, as always, is the Iron Man, Jared Nielsen. If he screws up, it's all on him, not me. Bob Herrig with Sports Illustrated from Augusta. He's already there, and he's got a new book on Tiger Woods that he's just finished publishing. Tiger, I've actually watched some online today. He's out on a practice round with Will Zalatoris. So we'll check in with Bob Herrig. I just feel like there's this animosity still, PGA to the LIV. We'll get into this a little bit further before we step aside. John Wilner at 10:30, Wilner Hotline. Tonight, national title game in Glendale, Connecticut. Can they take care of business against Purdue? I was at the game Saturday. It was 90% Purdue. I don't care what the Alabama fans or the UConn fans, I don't care what any of them say. That was a Purdue tailgate party. They're everywhere. And then Charlie Turner Thorne is going to be with us. Charlie Turner Thorne is going to be inducted this Saturday night into the Arizona Sports Hall of Fame. She is, of course, the longtime coach at Arizona State University, has moved on. She's now with the Mercury. I want to talk to her about the Final Four and what she saw chopping it up with Charlie Turner Thorne. So Bob Herrig, John Wilner, Charlie Turner Thorne. Sit back, relax, have some fun here on a Monday. My weekend was basketball a lot. And then last night I found the Steve Martin documentary on Apple TV Plus. I couldn't stop. I was supposed to work last night. There are things I was supposed to do. I'm texting staff. I am busy. I am too well to attend. It is so good. If you're anywheres, I mean, even now with Murders in the Building that is out, if you're anywheres north of 40 or you're into comedy and where did it really come from, I'm a George Carlin guy. I am. Seven Dirty Words, all that when I'm a kid, had the record, George Carlin. Steve Martin comes along and I'm in high school. He's got the arrow through the head and the bunny ears and all that. So how did it start for him? It started at Disneyland. It was just a fascinating dive. And my wife, she's sitting right there with me. She's into it. We didn't move. We were leaning forward. It was great. So, yes, the basketball takes priority. But if you get a chance, it's on Apple TV, Apple Plus, and it is the Steve Martin documentary. There's two parts. We got through part one last night. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business, as always. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate their longtime support, Jeff Mishi and company. They do it right at Desert Financial Credit Union. Actually had me up in their suite on Saturday. It was a good time. Although they look like ants running around on the floor. So Saturday, when it's Purdue doing their thing against North Carolina State as they're supposed to, and it's Alabama and UConn, the basketball itself was pretty predictable. The women's side, for me at least, on Friday night, I found my way to watch both games Friday night on the ladies' side. And yeah, the numbers are amazing. I just think, I'm going to talk to Charlie Turner Thorne about this, the style of play in the women's game has gotten better over the years. Being the first voice of the Phoenix Mercury back in 1997, the game was played under the rim. Fans in our country weren't really accepting. Oh, yeah, it's kind of cool. And now here we are, 27 years later, And it's only natural that the game would be better. Time has given ladies, there's options. There's young girls who were 10, 12. Now they're in their 30s. And they're able to say when their kids are coming along, you should go play basketball. I think there's also a level of acceptance too with the dad. We'll joke about this back when I was that dad, except fortunately I wasn't crazy, I don't think, where I would be with dads who had daughters. They didn't have sons. And they tried to make their daughters into their sons with the way that they would play or how it was, or coach them like they're playing football. No, they're not. And the game is just, it's good. It's just fun to watch. And it's not all about Caitlin Clark. Like, did Caitlin Clark have a great game start to finish yesterday? No. No, she didn't. But heck, I've seen the Michael Jordans and the Kobe Bryants and all that stuff at the national level. At the pro level, I think it's interesting that Diana Taurasi's pretty much laid it out there. She's not just going to give the mantle over to Caitlin Clark. She's not. And there's people that are just going after Diana online. I watched Diana and Sue Bird yesterday. They had Robin Roberts drop in. They had Snoop Dogg drop in while the women's game's going on. It was great. My wife hated it. It was great. I loved it. She wanted to hear the play-by-play. I'm reading between the lines of things that are being said. When the screen is set the other night in the late moments of the Iowa-UConn game, it's a foul. It's a foul. Oh, you don't call that there. That's on the men's side. Maybe that's why the men's side is not as entertaining. Oh, you're supposed to swallow. No, you're not supposed to do anything. You can say that. I guess, you know, if you're right, you're wrong. So I love how Dawn Staley goes about her business. I remember Dawn when she was playing for Charlotte in the WNBA. And now to see her do her thing. Why couldn't Dawn Staley coach Kentucky? Why? I don't think that's the right program for a woman to break through. I have no problem with a woman coach. Coach can coach. Some guys that, oh my gosh, women should be in the kitchen doing it. No, you're a caveman. That's not how it works. I want to talk to Wilner about this and Charlie Turner Thorne about the idea of Dawn Staley being considered for Kentucky. And when will that time come? And by the way, just so we're clear, while Bobby Hurley is sitting out here twisting in the wind, and his brother rightly so pointed out that ASU doesn't support him. I love that Danny Hurley called ASU out. I just loved it. The president, of course, over here, he doesn't know. He doesn't care. And the Pitchfork Up crowd, no matter how bad the product is, the Pitchfork Up crowd, they don't care. They're just like, oh, it's Bobby's fault. Bobby, he's not going to get the Kentucky job. But I do believe he loves it here. We just had him on last week. He loves it here. I do believe that there are some programs that in the trickle-down effect, like let's just say Nate Oates leaves Alabama for Kentucky. Bobby had Nate on his staff up at Buffalo. I just saw Greg Byrne with Jerry Colangelo. We chatted during the Final Four on Saturday. Would Greg Byrne make a run at Bobby Hurley? No, I don't think he would. I mean, Bobby's, by taking this job and not winning, he's hurt himself, but I know he can coach. I know that family can coach. And I love what that family stands for. They don't put up with nonsense. They don't bend. Bobby's had to bend, in my opinion, even though he shouldn't have, to bring in some players. And then players like DJ Horn and his dad, Bobby's like, you should go. Warren Washington, go. You're going to go shop yourself for the highest bidder, go. But I think the trickle-down effect, whoever leaves to take the Alabama job, is that a place where Bobby could end up? We'll talk to John Wilner about that. Suns with a bad loss last night. Don't try to explain it any other way. It's late in the year and they didn't play well and they end up losing to the Pelicans. Zion was great. Little concerned about the Diamondbacks. The hometown nine gets swept in Atlanta and Perdomo has a knee injury. They've had a lot of injuries here off the top of the season. And they don't have Montgomery yet. They don't have Rodriguez yet. And Ryan Nelson's just simply not ready to be a guy in the rotation, in my opinion. So, and most importantly, it's Masters Week. We just love that it's Masters Week. love what it's all about. And having John Rahm and Dustin Johnson and others competing against the Rorys and Tiger trying to walk it through or work it through. Next, we will go to Augusta and we will talk with Bob Herrig from Sports Illustrated. That's next. All right, let's go to Augusta. Bob Herrig is with us, as always, from Sports Illustrated. He has a new book that is out. It is Masters Week. It is so good to see you there in the press conclave. They have a moat, you know, fire-breathing dragons to let you in.
It's it's quite the structure. It's way beyond what we deserve. So pretty amazing place. So it's good to be here.
How many Masters for you now, Bob, in person?
Oh God, you put me on the spot. It's around 30.
Wow.
It's around 30. Yeah. So
when you first came there, what was it like compared to now?
Well, we were in a different building and, it's taken on more of a, I don't know if they would like this terminology, frankly, but it's taken on more of a Disney feel. I don't mean that bad. They have upped their game here over the years. They have gone out of their way to make this an incredible experience for those who come. And so they've enhanced things like hospitality and concession venues and merchandise. And look, this is to their benefit because they sell millions of dollars worth of it. But like, from the time I first started coming, the expansion of those facilities is remarkable. This media center that I'm in is like, you know, it's incredible to think of the money they spent to do this within a year. Like the old one, there was nothing here in 2016. And we came back in 2017, this monstrosity was built on the back of the driving range, and they put shovels in the ground the day after the 2016 tournament ended and basically worked 24/7 to get it done. The old media center, which was right next to the first fairway, they left up for a year just in case this one didn't get done. And then when we came back in 2018, that thing had been leveled and a brand new concession and merchandise area had been built. And it looks like it's been here forever. That's pretty amazing.
That's cool. Bob Herrig is with us from the Masters in Augusta. It is Masters Week. You have a book. I always like it when you have books. I think the last one we talked about was Tiger versus Phil.
Right.
And all sorts of stuff got swirling around on that one. So do you have a book there? Do you have the book there?
Yep, I do. I do.
Tell me about this book.
It's called Drive, the Lasting Legacy of Tiger Woods. And it's a lot of it is tied to, this is the 5-year anniversary, believe it or not, of his 2019 win, Masters win. And the original idea was to dive into what was behind that victory. I mean, Tiger wasn't Tiger then anymore. He was not the guy that was expected to win like he was when he won his first 14 majors. He was greatly diminished physically. And so I kind of thought it would be neat to get into the backstory of that, the surgery, all he had gone through. But as I was doing it, I came to the realization that, you know, this is sort of Tiger's legacy, his drive. It's not just in that. It was, you know, coming back from shooting 40, his very first Masters win, to win by 12. It was winning a U.S. Open basically on one leg in 2008 at Torrey Pines. It was 142 straight cuts. Over 7 years, he did not miss a cut. You have to have a different type of mental being to do that, because our human nature allows us to give ourselves a break once in a while. Guys on Fridays don't always have it. They're aching. Maybe their game's a little off. They're thinking, it'd be great to get home. Yeah. You know, Tiger never did that. He always pushed through. And even the 143rd event where he finally missed the cut, it took him hitting it in a bunker and blasting out and missing like a 10 footer on the last green to miss by one. It wasn't like he missed by five. And even to this day, here at age 48, having played professional tournament golf for 7 years now, I think he's missed 23 total cuts as a pro worldwide, 23, just as an example, and not to pick on him, because guys just miss cuts, but Jordan Spieth has missed 45 and he's 15 years younger.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Tiger, I mean, look, he's going for a record this week at the Masters. It would be his 24th straight cut at Augusta. And he shares the record with Couples and Gary Player. You know, the fact that he's made the cut here the last 2 years after all he's been through is just sort of another example of the book I did, and that's covered as well.
Book is out. What are you expecting from him this week? I don't want to dive in because I got a couple other things, but what are you expecting Tiger to do this week?
To be honest, I don't think we should be expecting much. He's played 24 holes in 2024. Mm. I mean, 24 holes. I mean, it's just not enough. I mean, you know, 2 years ago when he came back and it was his first tournament, like nobody cared that it was his first tournament. You know, last year he had played 72 holes at Riviera, which was an amazing accomplishment to make the cut there before he came here. And then it was obvious that things were not right with his ankle and he ended up having surgery. He played in the Bahamas in December and talked about playing once a month. And then for some reason, after he was sick at Riviera, he had the flu. I mean, I don't think it was a physical thing, but he didn't play in Florida. And we thought that he would. And it's just not a lot of golf to try to be competing against Scottie Scheffler and Jon Rahm and all these guys. You know, I mean, I think if Tiger can get that cut record and make the cut, then we just go from there. You know, I think that would be a great accomplishment.
What is the vibe and the feel, and put yourself in this too, of LIV versus PGA? We could do an hour on the business side of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
What is the feel this week at Augusta on what is going on with the state of the game? Rory last week talked about the lack of TV ratings and, you know, you're seeing leaderboards with who are these guys? Where is that now in the game of golf, Bob?
I think there's going to be less tension here this week than there was last year when it was very new. I mean, I think we've gotten used to the separation. It's not good for the game, though. This is the first time since the British Open that all the top players are playing together in the same tournament. And no matter what you think of LIV, there's a lot of opinions about it, but you can't deny that, you know, Brooks Koepka, Jon Rahm, Bryson DeChambeau, Dustin Johnson, you know, those are some of the best players in the world, and they don't play on the PGA Tour. They only play for LIV. And unless there's some sort of agreement to figure things out, this is how it's going to be. We won't see them all together again until next month at the PGA Championship. Hmm. So, you know, that's what Rory's talking about. I think some of the things he's talking about where the ratings are down is really due to the fact that the stars have not jumped up this year on the PGA Tour. I mean, Rory himself is not contended. He just finished third in San Antonio, but he wasn't in contention. You know, Wyndham Clark did win a tournament, the U.S. Open winner, and Scottie Scheffler's gotten hot recently. But like, you know, Ricky Fowler, Jordan Spieth, you know, these guys are not contending. You know, the main players, Justin Thomas, exactly. Xander contended at the Players Championship. Patrick Cantlay hasn't won in over a year. Are the top players, Max Homa, the top 10 guys have just not been doing anything. You know, I think that's part of it too. There is some fatigue with the whole money issue. People are tired of hearing about money.
Right.
But I also do think, you know, when there's a good leaderboard, people tune in.
For sure. For sure. Enjoy the week. Hold the book up again. Because we want Bob's book to sell. We want Bob's book to do really well.
That's right. Yeah, I got a kid in college, you know. Every little bit helps. Every little helps, right.
Good seeing you. Have a great week. Thanks.
Thanks for having me, Brad. Be well.
And we're back with more after this timeout. As always, when it's Monday, we chop it up with the great John Wilner. Follow him at Wilner Hotline. His content, of course, is on the site at sports360az.com. John is throughout the country doing his thing, scouring the face of the planet. Let's start with John Calipari. Are you surprised that he is leaving Kentucky, Mr. Wilner, to go to Arkansas? Let's just start there.
Yeah, a yes and no is the best I can do. It was clear as soon as they lost another early exit from the NCAAs, he has not performed well since the last Final Four, which was like 2015. He's making a ton of money. His team isn't as good as the money he's making. Kentucky fans, very frustrated, but they had no out. because the buyout in his contract was over $30 million, a terrible contract that Kentucky signed him to. So the only way Kentucky could get out of this is if he left on his own. And sure enough, we can thank SMU of all teams for this, because SMU fired their coach in to get ready and try to upgrade their program for entry in the ACC next season. SMU fired their coach. That created a vacancy in which they hired USC's Andy Enfield. USC hires Eric Musselman from Arkansas, creating the vacancy at Arkansas that John Calipari fills. So now it's a win. I think it's a win for everybody. Kentucky wanted him out, couldn't fire him. Arkansas needed a big-time coach, got one. USC needed a big-time coach, got one. It's a win-win-win.
Okay, so let's unpack this. Calipari's reign at Kentucky started to turn, we would think, around the beginning of NIL, around the beginning of transfer portal. He was a one-and-done guy. If you're going to just get the 1 year in and get it out of the way, go to Kentucky, land on your feet. Nothing wrong with that. That's just how he built the program. It was just every year a new roster. Why did it turn from your view? Why did it go badly for him at Kentucky? Because that is badly. You don't just go to get into the tournament at Kentucky.
Well, and yeah, right. And not only did they lose early this year, remember they lost to St. Peter's 2 years ago. I think they were the number two seed and lost to number 15 St. Peter's. So where did it turn? You could actually trace it to, and I don't remember the year, 17, 18. They lost. They went to the NIT and like lost to Robert Morris. Right. So I think he really, part of it is you start to get compared to your previous success. It is, even at Kentucky, it is hard to be a Final Four school every year. He had that great run. You know, he had a great run at UMass. He had a great run at Kentucky. They had Anthony Davis, all those guys, right? I mean, tons of pros. And then he got, I don't know if he got lazy. He got that huge contract, lifetime contract, that then UCLA helped him with, because when he was linked to the UCLA vacancy a few years ago, he, you know, it's the contract got bigger. So I think, you know, could have been maybe a little bit of just stagnation, a little bit of, you know, him kind of sitting fat and pretty in some ways. I don't know that NIL is it's part of a cause, but maybe not the only cause. And he has been using veterans. He's kind of gotten away from that one and done system and relied more on transfers and veterans. And it just hadn't worked. No, it hasn't worked.
Okay. So the other night I see Greg Byrne. He's wearing his crimson red jacket, as Greg does. And it's always good to see him. He was just put on the executive board down here for the Fiesta Bowl. And
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. And
ASU alumni, an ASU alum, by the way.
That's it. Should have been the AD down here whenever they hire one. Bobby Hurley is sitting here. Now, I'm not saying Bobby Hurley to Kentucky. And I'm not even sitting here starting a rumor, okay? But if anybody sees, and what Danny Hurley laid and filleted ASU on the table last Thursday about,
yes, he did.
If Bobby had what I have, or these coaches have, he'd be winning too. Don't you think in trickle down, maybe somebody somewhere is saying, you know what Danny Hurley said about his brother? We're the place that does have resources. We're the place that gives a damn, because they don't give a damn at Arizona State about basketball. He's just there. It's not degrading Bobby. It's degrading the program. Bobby's great. What do you think? Bobby Hurley going to be involved in this mix of trickle down? Would that surprise you? Not to Kentucky, John.
You know, I think you're right with the chain reaction scenario, right? We're going to get, in some ways, Calipari leaving Kentucky could have the similar impact to Nick Saban retiring at Alabama football, right? Saban retires. Kalen DeBoer leaves Washington. Jed Fish leaves Arizona.
On and on.
Brent Brennan leaves San Jose State to go to Arizona, right? So let's say Kentucky hires, you know, Nate Oates from speaking of Greg Byrne, Nate Oates, the Alabama coach, just took them to the Final Four. He's atop the list, I think. So I don't think Hurley would replace whoever replaces Calipari. Like, I don't know that he'd be Alabama's pick if Nate Oates went to Kentucky, but Alabama would hire somebody good, and maybe Hurley's there. So maybe Hurley is like second or third level chain reaction departure. Maybe, I don't know. You know, I know he really likes ASU.
Loves it.
But next year is obviously a critical year. right? I mean, and the Enfield, USC kind of stayed one step ahead of the posse by taking that SMU job. Could Hurley think, you know what, maybe a mid-level school in the SEC, Big Ten, ACC, does that suit him? Could be. I mean, it's clear. I mean, Danny's comments were, you know, like you said, he laid it all out there. The question is anybody listening? Is anybody there? Hello?
No. ASU. Yeah, no.
I mean, Michael.
I can give you the answer on that. The answer is the definitive N-O exclamation point. He doesn't.
I mean, I think a lot of people who are involved in ASU athletics understand that, but the people who matter understand and care? I think Michael Crow is too busy trying to do his 40,000 foot reconfiguration of their systems and their processes and all that, so he can hire an AD. And, you know, and meanwhile, the arena is how old? 50.
By the way, if they promote from within, knock yourselves out, guys. 150 days, and I'll just promote from within. Never mind, I've had people on the inside that have said, yeah, the Pat Chun, who went to Washington, he wanted the job.
Yeah.
U of A, new AD, she wanted the gig.
Yeah, everybody
never,
was
never mind. Never mind. You guys have it all figured out. Pension
right.
Points, people are going to come after me and say, oh, you're just not supporting us. No, because your president doesn't care.
My money would be on, and it's only a nickel, but yeah. I think Graham Mersini's got a real good chance. That's the kind of the word on the street, that they will go internal. And only Michael Crow could make an internal hire seem like an outside the box move, right? And we'll see how it works out. You never know, but I think Graham's got a real good chance.
Who wins tonight?
I'm going with UConn. I think UConn is 8-10 points better. And they're just, and they've been on the stage, right? They won it last year. They are, you know, and they make that Alabama game, it felt close. It wasn't close. What they win by, they were in control the second half. They went on that run.
Yeah.
At that point, you knew Alabama wasn't going to win. But it still felt close because they were clobbering people so badly early in the tournament that they make a 14-point game seem like it's really 6 or 8. I think they'll win. They've got a matchup for Zach Edey up front and Donovan Klingon, right? I mean, it's a great throwback. It's like watching, you know,
Patrick Russell against the team. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I like that. I like the fact that there's going to be centers heavily involved for both teams on both sides of the court. That makes it, to me, that makes it much more interesting.
The women's side, what's your view of it now that it's complete? I believe ABC completely missed the mark and could have put that game in prime time and brought in millions of more viewers. I believe that after being at the Final Four on Saturday, and it was packed, Purdue brought, I think, the whole state showed up out here.
Yeah.
The women's game could be played in stadiums rather than in arenas. What do you think, John?
I am of the opinion that a lot of folks in the media ecosystem need to stop. You know, every time there's a TV audience number comes out, it's comparing this and that. Let's just enjoy the fact that women's basketball has had a huge increase in popularity and that both sports are helping the other, right? I think it's they're playing off each other. Audience for women's helping the men. Audience for men's helping the women. But what I need to see first is for the women's game to be at this level without Caitlin Clark, right? Sure. Let's see next year. Now, I agree with you about ABC missing a huge opportunity there, but let's see how it does next year and the year after when there's no – she is a phenomenon, right? And I'm not sure that it will be at this level next year without her. They also had a perfect situation with the Kim Mulkey controversy with the Washington Post and, mm-hmm. you know, LSU, mm-hmm. Angel Reese. And then you got Clark going against the undefeated South Carolina. It laid out all perfectly. They were close games. Let's see what happens next year. I think it's going to do much better than it has in the past, but I don't know that it's going to have the same numbers that it did this year.
I think players like Juju Watkins are going to benefit so much because the TV executives who drive all of this are going to try so hard And I'm not stuttering here. It's just, I'm going to try so hard, John, to build up and find the next five or six players that they can go market because that's just who they are.
And it will help that USC is going to be in the Big Ten from that regard, because Juju Watkins will get exposed to all those Big Ten campuses, all the media, the Midwest media. That will really help her become a national star. Is she going to get to the Clark level? I don't know. The part about the Clark thing is she's like Steph Curry, right? She's shooting from 40 feet, which appeals to just kind of mainstream sports fans in a way that the other style of basketball, you know, the driving and all that, that doesn't have the same appeal. The shooting just resonates with people.
Got about a minute left, and we're going to leave some meat on the bone this week on some other topics. But could Don Staley be the head coach at Kentucky?
Woo, that is a great question. I don't
Are we there yet,
John? I don't think we're there yet. I don't think we're there. And I'm not sure Kentucky's
– Is it the program? Is it Kentucky? There's like no way we'd have a woman as the head coach, because Dawn Staley's just killing everybody over on the women's side.
She is, and the other thing is that she's got the attitude that you'd need, right, and the background, the player background. I mean, she's in these commercials with Krzyzewski, right? She's kind of got what you'd need.
Gravitas.
But I don't, gravitas is a good word. I don't know that Kentucky's the place, and I'm not sure that this is the time yet. Could it happen in 3 to 5 years at a different program? Maybe. I think it would be absolutely fascinating. It'd be fantastic. Mm-hmm. I just am not sure the men's game is ready for that. She's ready for that. I don't know the men's game is ready for it.
I'll let you go off that. Appreciate your time as always. Have a great week.
Thanks a lot.
And there's John Wilner. We're back with more after this timeout. All right, one of my favorite people that I've covered through the years is sitting across me in a Zoom. It's Charlie Turner Thorne, because Coach is going into the Arizona Sports Hall of Fame. I was going to get into the college basketball thing, and I
thought we were talking about that Final Four or something.
I usually tell people what I'm going to talk to them about, but in this case, first reaction is always best reaction. So that little look there was awesome. What does this mean to you, by the way, other than you're getting old? Or we're not supposed to say that to each other, but we can because we're friends. What does this mean to you Saturday night?
Yeah, you know, it's a big honor for everybody that I think in particular was a part of my ASU career, because that was 25 years. So that was a big part of my career. I was at NAU for 3 years and, you know, been with the Mercury now for almost a year, but you know, I think just all the players, all the staff, all the fans, all the donors, like it's just an opportunity to celebrate everybody that, you know, helped us to pretty good success, Brad. So I mean, you know, when you're a coach going into the Hall of Fame, it's never, I mean, nobody does anything by themselves. You and I know this, but in particular, like, you know, you're an amazing broadcaster. You should be in the Hall of Fame. You know, there's Richard Jefferson, you know, basketball players going into the Hall of Fame. I wasn't that good as an athlete, but, you know, as a coach, it's just like that body of work with all those people that help share it. So it's going to be fun. I mean, we have some, you know, players and staff and people that will be there, and it'll just be kind of a fun reunion party.
Do you have to talk about yourself? You hate that.
I do not. I do not plan to.
Like, you're going to go up there and say just what you said here. It's about all of you. It's not about me. And that's how it should be. But when you have something like this, how many Hall of Fames are you in, Charlie?
I mean, not that many. Just this is my third.
Some people are lucky to get into half. What are the three Hall of Fames that you're in, Charlie Turner Thorne?
I'm in my high school Hall of Fame.
Where's that?
That's Bishop Alemany High School in San Fernando Valley, Los Angeles. We actually have had, you know who was there? I think Rick Monday.
Is that right?
There the year I got inducted. And it's kind of ironic because he played at ASU. But it's actually a pretty storied.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm a
little high school for athletes in the Valley. Yep. And then Arizona State.
Yeah.
And now Arizona. So, and yeah. So anyway, but.
Do you still know the fight song for Bishop Alemany? Do you know it? Can you rattle it off? No.
No, I don't. I'm pretty tone deaf. So let's not. I do not choose fight songs for 100, Brad.
Yeah, that's right. Charlie Turner Thorne is with us for a couple of minutes. She's going into the Arizona Sports Hall of Fame this coming Saturday. All right. What did you make out of our industry? And you're part of it. You're doing some broadcasting. Our industry just losing their minds over the women's game, the TV numbers, Caitlin, all of that. What'd you make out of it?
Yeah, I mean, it's wonderful. It's fantastic. You know, I mean, we have sold out the women's Final Four for years. I mean, that's not the issue. It's the viewership. Over 14 million. I mean, that's the most viewed ESPN aired program ever.
Right.
So, I mean, that's pretty elite. So, you know, it's exciting. I think you have a combination. The game has grown, but you just have the star power, you know, and now that I've always said, I don't know if I've ever said this to you, but I know you'll agree. Like, you know, why can't women's sports get more attention? It's like, well, the media has to give it to them. Like the media legitimizes us, right? You legitimize me, Brad. You complete me. No, just kidding.
Listen to you. I was an assistant coach of hers for one game and their players are looking at me like, they're playing UCLA. Nikki Blue's just killing them. And I'm like, you got to get in your face. And Charlotte's like, what did I do bringing this dope over? But
yeah, no,
I don't
but
know if I legitimize, but.
But, you know, obviously if they don't cover us.
Right.
People don't watch us. And I think the coverage, you know, all the players on commercials and, you know, just the great personalities are being covered and being cared about. And so that with a good product has helped. Like, I think it grow, and you got to give a lot of credit to a lot of the stars of the game right now. I mean, Caitlin Clark, Paige Beckers, and, you know, Angel Reese and I mean, Juju Watkins. And there's just so many like, you know, fun personalities and great basketball players out there that are helping drive it. And then, you know, you turn on State Farm or what, you know, all these commercials. And I think it kind of started with the WNBA, mm-hmm. You know, the viewership has just gone up exponentially with that. And, you know, Sue Bird or Diana Taurasi and all these players in the commercials, you know, the state, I mean, if people haven't watched, I still watch regular TV at times. So I see commercials, but you know, just the visibility of female athletes or female women's basketball players kind of took off. I think it was, I don't know. I felt like it was bigger last summer than it had ever been for the WNBA. And then it just kind of continued with the college season and culminated yesterday in a good game.
What about the, so you know this, I was the original play-by-play voice of the Mercury in 1997. Jerry calls me, Colangelo calls me and says, you want to do the game? I said, sure. I've got daughters, I'm all about it. The game was roundly ripped and criticized by the basketball so-called aficionados because it was played so far below the rim and it wasn't aesthetically pretty. The game now, Charlie, it's not like when Lisa Leslie dunked a ball, it was like, okay, that's one person. You're not going to sell a whole league on that. And the WNBA, by the way, did try. They showed that over and over and over. Like, come on, guys. It's not respectful of everybody else. But aesthetically, I'm watching the games of the women's tournament, and they're much more pleasing to me. They're much more fundamental to me than the men's game, one. Two, it's just a higher brand than obviously 1997 when I was doing the games. Do you see it the same way? Or has it always been this way?
I mean, I think, you know, to me, I'm pretty critical because I'm a coach. You know, it's like, you know, take care of the ball, you know, get a rebound, you know, things like that I see in every game. But the individual athleticism and skill level has, I think, you know, continued to get better. I mean, in terms of, you know, little girls playing from third grade year round on, I mean, it just naturally has continued to, you know, evolve into these like freshman phenom in college basketball right now, which there's a number. I mean, Phil Wiley on South Carolina, you know, watched her. So I think it has gotten better. Yeah. I mean, I think it's gotten better and I think the personalities have been allowed to grow. You know, I think, the, you know, like I said at the beginning, the product is better. And, you know, and that goes with the coaching and the player development and everything. But mainly it's just that the media, like, is having fun with it, excited about it, wants to showcase the personalities. Like, you know, if I love Brad Sesbutt and any, you can do no wrong, you know, and you're putting you on commercials and stuff, then I'm loving it, you know, and they're creating that excitement. So I think even if, you know, Charlie goes out and misses five layups, it's like, oh, but we want to watch Charlie, you know, like, you know, does that make sense? Because even, you know, when we're watching the NBA stars and other pro athletes and, you know, they strike out four times or they, you know, miss five free throws, you know, we still love them and stuff because they've got this, you know, the media has helped create their fan base.
Sure. No, I think
we have that now in women's basketball is what I'm trying to say.
No, it's fair. I think just simply arguing over whether a foul should be called in the final moments of the Iowa-Connecticut game and that taking over the news cycle. You know, was it a foul? Was it not a foul? Should they have swallowed the whistle and all that stuff? That is part of the deal if you're going to be in this. I think asking the question, is Dawn Staley ready to be the head coach at Kentucky? People would roll their eyes, but are we getting to a place where a woman could be coaching a high-level men's basketball program? I think those are all things that are reasonable to ask now. Agree, disagree?
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, it was totally a moving screen. So it was,
yes. You
know, I mean, I saw it. I was up, you know, kitty corner on the gym, and I happened to be looking right at Edwards. It was like, you know, it's like, I felt bad for her. I mean, she just was way too wide, you know, moved and everything. So good call. I just want to go on record saying that.
Yeah, that's right.
Sure. Come on, people. Like, you know, you can't not call that. And then what was the next thing we were just talking about?
Dawn Staley.
Yeah. Well, I mean, basketball is basketball. You know, Tennessee just hired a predominantly Division II women's basketball coach, you know, and Sherry Cole came out of high school and, you know, Becky Hammond coached with the Spurs. And there's lots of women in the NBA right now that are helping coach. I mean, I don't think, you know, I think it's more a matter of, you know, what a Dawn Staley, who's a fantastic coach, wants to do. Sure. There's no doubt she can coach men, you know, or women and coach pro or college. I mean, to me, I guess that's kind of I think that's kind of an odd question because, of course, an elite coach could coach either gender.
I agree with
you. The game is different. I mean, you know, there's definitely some differences, just like it's different in levels.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I think what Danny Hurley was saying Danny Hurley said a lot of things I agreed with on Thursday. One is about his brother, but that's a whole nother discussion. The other is about.
I love the Hurley family.
The Hurley family is the best. I'll just go down this path with you. And if you want to shut me down, shut me down. But when Danny says, yeah, if my brother had the same resources and commitment that we have here, these four teams, he'd be doing the same thing. I'm like, preach it. I'm standing there just cheering, not openly there, but.
So
that side. And then Danny saying, look, you have to recruit the parents in this day and age because you don't want a kid that's going to come in here and make it about themselves. And that's why I love the Hurleys, because you can see that with his team. It's very effortless. And so Dawn Staley going to a program like Kentucky, I don't know if Kentucky blue blood basketball would be ready for a female head coach. In my humble opinion, just talking.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either.
They're crazy. Just so we're clear.
She's at the top of everything. You know, I mean, why she doesn't? You know, I don't know unless she had some burning desire to coach men.
Yeah.
You know, as a different challenge, maybe. But I think so many years, we as women. You know, basketball players. And I think Don and I, she might be even a little bit older than me, but you know, I mean, we just came up without all the resources, you know, and all the support. And, you know, now that it's coming because of people like Don who have, you know, worked hard and, you know, been great pro players, been great college coaches. I mean, I almost think she would think it would be like selling out her people. Because I mean, we've all worked really hard to be what we did. I mean, what are we talking about? Like, wow, you know, there's probably more excitement on the women's tournament than the men's tournament.
Agreed.
You know, and you know, you look at the viewership and everything and it's like, yeah, we did this and we've worked hard and, you know, our game is good and, you know, we want to empower women. I mean, we're over 50% of the population, but you know, the stats aren't really good in terms of salaries and, you know, all the you know, the equity, equality. So I just think a lot of us older women think that way. Not that we wouldn't, you know, enjoy coaching men, but like, do we feel our obligation and our, you know, that we need to keep helping women help women?
And Annie Myers Drysdale on a couple of weeks back, and we were talking about,
she's the best.
She's great.
She's the GOAT.
She is so, you know, when these people are talking about greatest women's basketball players of all time and they don't include her, just get out.
Go they don't know what they're talking about then. They shouldn't even be having the conversation.
Oh, get out. Yeah, get out. Just get out. But we were talking about how even today, Title IX is still not enforced as it should be for women in college, that they're still not Title IX compliant, was her quote. And so she's, you know, she's fighting for it and she's seeing it. I put something on social yesterday. Our good buddy Jeff Metcalf disagreed with me about it. It's, I want to see these games in prime time. He agreed with me on that. I want to see him in a stadium. He disagreed with me on that. I was out there on Saturday at the Final Four. There's 70,000 people. Yeah, they're mostly Purdue fans because, you know, the whole state comes out here. But I think if we're going to talk about equity and equitable, you can't tell me you couldn't have fit 50,000, 60,000 people in to watch South Carolina against Iowa. You can't tell me that.
Right.
And I just think we have to get to that point where, yeah, being in a stadium, different backdrop, I understand all of it, but yeah, let's make this equitable across the board.
Yeah. You know, the interesting thing about that, I mean, thank you, Brad. Like, I don't disagree with you. At the same time, last time we hosted the men's Final Four in Phoenix, I went, and it was, I couldn't see. I couldn't see the court. I mean, it was, you know, I forgot my binoculars. So, yeah, I mean,
across.
Yeah. I mean, the one wonderful thing about the women's Final Four is it's like a very elite ticket, mm-hmm, and there's not a bad seat in the house.
No, I agree with that. In the footprint,
you know, from a fan and spectator standpoint, you know, we kind of like that.
Yeah, Footprint Center is the home of the women's Final Four here in 2 years. And do you like doing what you're doing? Do you miss being a head coach at the collegiate level?
I do not miss it at all. You know, 30, see, I was 28 years as a head coach of my 33 in Division I college coaching. That's a lot of years. Yep. 25 as a Power 5 head coach is a lot of years. So I loved it, wouldn't trade anything, but am really enjoying being available more so for my family and, yeah, you know, just learning some new skills like the broadcasting. I really enjoy that. Helping out with the Mercury, I really enjoy that. So just better tempo for a, as you pointed out, an old woman, you know, a little better tempo, not having to just grind, work every day of my life all the time. So
this is old. This is old right here. Okay. This is not old.
That's the look, man. The shaved head. Are you kidding?
I just said enough of this, you know, not going to be on a cheap golf course in the middle of Nebraska with a patch here and a patch here. So, what are you most looking forward to on Saturday night before I get you out of here?
Just seeing people. I'll get to, you know, see some people, that I don't, you know, I text with my players, I talk with them, but like a lot of the players that are in town and some of my staff, and, you know, I tried not to like really invite people from, I didn't want people to have to like, you know, fly in or feel, you know, any, but there's a few people coming in. So my mom's coming in. So that's pretty special. Yeah. She hasn't been here in a long time, and, not a great circumstance because we lost my dad a couple of weeks ago. So, but it allows her to travel now. So that's going to be special.
Condolences. Hang in there. That stuff's
Thank you.
Brutal. Well, fun. We are excited for you, and it's always good to chop it up with you. I'll let you go off that. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad.
Charlie Turner Thorne. She is an Arizona Sports Hall of Famer as Saturday. She started in two other Hall of Fames. She's a big freaking deal, and it's good to visit with her. We're back with more after this time out.